The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Sackings, golden goodbyes and coin tosses. Slavisa Jokanović is the first Premier League manager to get sacked. With Fulham bottom of the table, in comes Claudio Ranieri. It's Wayne Rooney Day in England. The number 10 shirt, a guard of honour, the captaincy when he comes on. The question is, are we doing enough to celebrate his international career? And are the Premier League doing enough to make sure Richard Scudamore remains solvent in retirement? And is a three-week ban enough for the referee who disgraced football by making two captains play papers as a stone when he forgot a coin? For shame. We'll answer your questions, preview the international weekend, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. We begin with a question from Barry from Ireland. This will be my third pre-6am rise, brackets not in that way, close brackets, this week. All of them your fault. Do you feel any guilt? Hi, Barry.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm tired, but enthusiastic.
That's not what you said in the sound check, is it? You seem happier already. There's a difference between off-air and on-air, Barry, a one degree of happiness difference.
Oh, I've switched myself on.
Okay.
This is showbiz.
Faker Others, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Are you having a nice birthday?
Oh, so far it's brilliant. I couldn't wish for any better people to spend it with.
I have a question for you, Barry, because you're quite passionate about foods which can be eaten indoors. And Faye has a hard-boiled egg open and is eating it in this airless studio. I just wondered how you felt about hard-boiled eggs being consumed in this area.
I have no objections to it.
Okay.
If Faye was sitting across from me in the tube eating, I don't know, a stinky McDonald's or other fast foods are available, I would be very unimpressed. But it does seem a strange choice of food stuff.
Is that because she's cooked the egg slightly, and if it was raw, you'd have it? Hey, Lars Sivertsen, how are you?
Hi, Max. I'm pretty sleepy.
I was walking to get the coffees, and I saw, basically, I sort of tried to avoid what I thought was a lumbering vagrant coming towards me, thinking, I haven't got any change, you know. And it was Lars. It's nice to see you. I didn't realise that everyone else who does this pod is just incapable of getting out of bed earlier than 9 o'clock.
Well, they're not. I mean, the current pod is between two sort of healthy morning people and Barry and myself. Mm. So I think it's very much a split room in that regard.
All right. Well, let's start then with Fulham. Slavisa Jokanović sacked. Barry, is it an outrageous decision?
No, I don't think so. I feel sorry for him insofar as I think he's a victim of his own success. This time last year, Fulham were in the bottom half of the championship, I think 16th, 17th, something like that. And promotion to the Premier League looked out of the question. He got them to the playoffs on their run of, 16 or 18 games unbeaten. I can't remember the exact number. They beat Aston Villa in the playoff final very easily. The scoreline was 1-0, but the outcome never looked in doubt. And having brought in 12 players over the summer, he's failed to gel the team. I don't know how much input he had into the purchases, but I think he's a victim of his own success. He'll get another job. He'll be all right.
This is from Opta Joe. Only two sides have ever had fewer points after their opening 12 Premier League games to a season than Fulham's tally of five. Everton in 94-95 and QPR in 2012-2013. I think they both survived. I mean, Everton obviously did, but I think QPR, I think that was the Aguero season, unless I've got my years muddled up. Faye, look, I'm surprised it took this long for any Premier League manager to be sacked, to be honest.
Yeah, I think there were four Premier League managers sacked by this time last season. So that's impressive in itself and progress, if you like. I do feel sorry for Jokanović. Exactly as Barry said, victim of his own success. But unfortunately, cliche galore, it's a results business and he didn't, you know, get the results. And I think that some of that is slightly unfair because the recruitment department apparently had much more say in who was brought in over the summer than Jokanović did. So, you know, he was, if you bring 12 players into a squad that's already gelled, got themselves promoted, got a really good, you know, vibe going on, that's obviously going to upset the balance ever so slightly. Players who did well in the Championship and helped them get promoted have been, you know, moved aside slightly, which happens. But I think when you've got a good squad and a good atmosphere to then bring in 12 new players, we've seen it before, it doesn't always work, and it's taken them far too long to start gelling, and arguably they're still not.
And Lars, part of the problem was they lost quite a few players at the end of last season anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing was just a couple of weeks before the season was due to start, they had like two defenders like total in their squad or something like this. I mean, they really sort of cobbled together parts of this squad quite late on before the season. And I initially figured, okay, they're terrible at defending, but most of their defenders just arrived. They'll figure each other out, you know, it'll get better. But then it just really didn't. I think, most of all, I think this is a stunning reversal from Fulham, who said quite recently that he was very, very safe indeed. I mean, Shahid Khan wrote in the Matchday programme a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to quote here, "Don't believe anything you read. The sensational and fictional headlines related to Slavisa, I'm in equal parts amused, astonished and disappointed. Optimism comes naturally knowing we have a head coach who not only understands and appreciates the honour of representing Fulham, but also the past two seasons has found the right formula to hit our stride in time for a strong run in the second half of the campaign."
But that so was very much the 3-0
very much fake news this second.
Well, do you think when he said
shows, when he cannot, said when clubs say these things, you cannot take it for good fish, well, when, as we say in my country.
When the first line is "Don't believe anything you read," he means don't believe this bit you're just about to read. On Ranieri, Shahid Khan says Claudio is risk-free and ready-made for the Premier League, and particularly so for what we need at this moment at Fulham. To which Greg Johnson wrote, "Fulham, no, it was Nigel Pearson that kept Leicester up." Right. Do we think Claudio is a good appointment?
Probably. He wasn't their first choice, according to the Telegraph. They approached Arsene Wenger, Andre Villas-Boas, and the chap who recently left Monaco.
Jardim.
So Ranieri was at best fourth choice, but I would imagine he'll do a good job. He's incredibly experienced. He obviously won the title with Leicester, but before that he's managed something like 18 different clubs. Has almost certainly encountered everything there is to encounter in football management. The concern would be that after the season after he won the title with Leicester, it looked like they were going down and he was in charge of a fractured dressing room, which rumour suggests is what they have at Fulham at the moment. The guys who were marginalised after winning promotion are upset with all these big name overpaid signings coming in. Not overpaid, but paid more than them. And he may struggle to repair the damage that's been done in that dressing room.
Interesting that Jukanovic was Ranieri's first signing at Chelsea in 2001, isn't it?
Awkward.
And a Fulham fan has been made the new chief executive of the Premier League. Susanna Dynage will succeed Richard Scudamore from early 2019. She says, "I'm excited at the prospect of taking on this fantastic role. The Premier League means so much to so many people." Lars, what are her big jobs? Just getting more money from broadcasters? Is that, I mean,
it's more a case of keeping the big clubs happy. Seems like a pressing matter right now, given the week we've had and what we know about just how serious some of the bigger brands in football are about this Super League business becoming a thing. It's a balancing act between giving the big clubs too much of what they want so that you annoy everyone else and not giving them any of the things they want so that they, you know, you risk losing them altogether. I suspect that's a big problem she has to face.
I mean, the biggest story out of this was this 5 million golden goodbye for Richard Scudamore. Paul Wilson writing in the paper yesterday saying, "Note the date of the 13th of November 2018. It marks the formal end to football's 140-year life as the people's game." After the Premier League asked for £250,000. I think that ship has probably sailed.
I was about to say. So, yeah. Where have you been the last 10 years?
But it's a bizarre story, isn't it, Lars?
It's what they would say in the sort of information business, that the optics aren't great. I think everyone can agree that at a time when there are many more pressing matters in the world and the game, spending that much money on Richard Scudamore because he's going away doesn't seem like a great priority. So if we're going to try to have a discussion, let's play devil's advocate. And one might argue that like the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, makes something like 30, 40 million a year in dollars still. But, you know, Scudamore might say that being ahead of this massive organization that has been very, very successful under his time, you know, he's entitled to be paid very well. I mean, bosses around the world make too much money. That's kind of how the world works. But it's one of those things that just looks horrendous, and I think it's completely unnecessary. I think if any club that has that amount of money lying around a spare change should just give it to one of the charities you listed very wonderfully on TalkSport the other day, Max.
Yeah, the thing is as well is it would be really easy for the Premier League to just give him 5 million and it was part of his payoff and we'd have all gone, well, that's quite a lot, but fair enough. But to actually go actively to the other clubs and say, have you got it? I've heard Wolves aren't particularly happy about it. I suppose they just came up. That means like teams that have just been promoted going, hang on a sec, can't you get 150 off Aston Villa? They've been there for years, you know. I don't know how you reacted to this story, Faye.
Well, obviously I work for the Premier League. I've met Richard Scudamore on a number of occasions, and to me he just does not come across as the type of person who would necessarily have appreciated that. I think he would have been embarrassed by it. Apparently it was an idea of Bruce Buck's. I don't really know how well it's gone down. Apparently not very with all the clubs.
Glenn Moore made a good point on Twitter that Bruce Buck has spent so much money on payoffs, right, at Chelsea, that he's just lost a sense of reality, that's sort of what you have to do if anybody's
force
leaving.
Of habit. Someone's leaving, we must give them loads of money. That's
think,
how it works.
Do you think if you go round for dinner at the Bucks, just as you're walking out, he just says, here's a bag of cash, payoff. Anyone who leaves anywhere, and Bruce Buck. I need to spend more time with Bruce Buck, really, don't I?
It does seem quite vulgar and sort of indicative of everything the Premier League stands for and everything that's wrong with it. You know, this idea that, oh, this guy's leaving, let's have a whip around and just give him a big bag of money. You know, buy him a present, buy him a nice car and maybe leave 3 million in the glove box or something. I don't know, but just for Bruce Buck to actually think this is an idea that wouldn't cause controversy or would people wouldn't be repulsed by it, it tells you a lot about the state of the Premier League, and I suppose it tells you a lot about Bruce Buck.
Samir Nasri news. He's training with West Ham. He was due to have a medical as he reaches the end of his 18-month doping ban. Concerns have been expressed over the 31-year-old's fitness levels. I just like the idea of people wandering around the London Stadium expressing concerns. Manuel Pellegrini's keen to sign him, and they go way back. Lanzini's out, obviously. Yarmolenko's out as well. Do we think Nasri is the man you need?
I think he will be like an injection of nutrients into that team.
Does anybody want to speak highly of Samir Nasri? He has an image that he's not good for dressing rooms.
I wouldn't.
But, you know, that might be disingenuous.
I wouldn't want him. I think his attitude stinks, and he's a drugs cheat. But again, it's the Premier League, isn't it? These things don't
They've
seem to matter.
They've got a good atmosphere going at the moment at West Ham, though, so it would seem strange to bring in a controversial character, particularly when they've had issues like that in the past, and then they seem to get on. You know, it's been, certainly when I've gone down to Rush Green this season, it's been the best atmosphere that I've seen at West Ham for quite a while.
How bad does a bad apple have to be to, you know, if everyone's happy and someone comes in, and surely maybe they can turn him around, or maybe he's been rehabilitated in this 18 months.
Oh, bless you.
Arnautovich will sort him right out.
Yeah.
But I like this idea of just collecting talented but really inconsistent attackers, which West Ham seems to have going. They already got Yarmolenko, Felipe Anderson, and Arnautovich there, who are all three players who on their day are very good but rarely have too many good days in a row. So add another one to that mix. I mean, I guess the theory is to just chuck a bunch of them in there. Ideally, one of them will be good at any given game.
It should be fine. It's international break, isn't it? So Arnautovic's brother, who is his agent, has been chatting about how, you know, he shouldn't be in relegation zones and he'll be off to a Champions League club soon. International break is always good for that.
Oh, yeah. And then players give interviews at home, you know, to local news outlets or favourite journalists, and then forget that, you know, due to the internet and people having ears, that word gets out, and then they come back and deny ever having said, or, oh, it was lost in translation, or I was.
Joe Cole's retired. Fred says, Joe Cole, legend or letdown? For me, joined the Hammers and wanted to be a legend. When he first joined the England squad, he wanted to be an England legend. And when he joined Chelsea, he wanted to be a Chelsea legend.
Well, I remember when Joe Cole was, God, and I'm going back a long time now, Joe Cole was sort of 14 or 15 years old, and all you heard was about this unbelievable talent West Ham had, and he kept being talked up. We never actually saw him, and then he started to play, and he was obviously good. But I would say, on the strength of what was expected of him, and admittedly it's unfair because these expectations were made about a boy who hadn't even made a senior appearance for West Ham yet, I would say on the strength of what was expected from a bit of a letdown. And I think, you know, his big move to Liverpool just was a disaster. But he was a good player. He had a good career, and good luck to him.
Well, he was a very technically gifted player at a time when English football wasn't producing too many of those. And you wonder if maybe he actually came around a few years too early. I mean, the way football is played now, so many teams line up in this sort of 4-2-3-1. Like, if he could have played his entire career in that row of three behind the striker rather than have to play as like an ad hoc wide man in a 4-4-2 and or whatever he would end up being used as, I think it might have been easier for him. And I also wonder how, to what extent, this kind of goes in with the Ross Barkley thing, to what extent he was properly coached as a player, because there was so much natural talent there, but end product was fluctuated wildly. I mean, he had good seasons, obviously, but you could say he's a little bit disappointing in the sense that he maybe could have been bigger, but he also had a decent career, as I'm sure he'd point out.
But it always goes to the same point, that you pile all this pressure onto a youngster, you know, 14, 15 years old, and we're already talking about him being the next Paul Gascoigne, etc. It's too much. You know, this, we could be sitting here, God forbid, in 20 years time, talking about Jadon
Sancho.
Fingers
crossed, you mean?
Jadon Sancho, for example, having exactly the same thing. God, you know, look what we talked. Or Phil Foden. Look how much, you know, we talk them up, and have they, you know, realised their potential?
It is difficult, though, isn't it? Because if you, you know, we'll talk about Jadon Sancho in a minute, and we're excited to see him play for England today. And where's the line between building someone up and being excited? You know, it's a difficult...
And it's a very good point you make.
Square to circle.
It's a good point you made, Faye, and it's a good day to make it, seeing as it's Rooney-palooza, because I think Rooney is also one of those guys who we keep judging according to what we thought he should become, rather than maybe appreciating the player that he was and eventually did become. And I think that's a big problem in football, because, yeah, we do get excited about talented youngsters, and we should. But we should then be a little bit careful about judging their entire rest of their careers through the prism of what we then expected of them when they were 16.
Mm.
He did punditry for BT against for Chelsea, Bartek Borisov. Producer Jonathan said he was good. He came on Fantasy Football, and he was really interesting, actually, in his whole career. You're right, I'm talking about how good he was when he was young. He did score that absolutely glorious goal in the World Cup. You know, that's a good memory to have. When we're old, and instead of having pictures on the wall, we just have GIFs. He can have that. He can have a massive plasma screen GIF to show his grandchildren.
I heard Peter Crouch talking about Joe Cole the other day, and he said he felt really guilty when he scored for England and did the robot dance, and he still has this image of Joe Cole going over to him to shake his hand and him totally blanking him and doing going into the robot. And that was his lasting memory.
You're not listening to other podcasts.
Oh, no, never.
Thank goodness for that. Right, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll begin with, as Lars has called it, the Rooney-palooza. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The 29th of November, Barry, the Emmanuel Centre in London, me, you, Jonathan, and TBC performing live.
Yeah.
and it's a sellout.
So I heard. Mm. I have a feeling someone from a rival podcast may have bought all the tickets just with the sole intention of not going, just to make us look foolish or something.
Well, as long as we get the money.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fine.
Absolutely fine. And now it's sold out. We don't even have to really do it. Do we, didn't we? Just
well, I need five comps. Is it sold out, Will I be able to get my five mates in?
I think you can get some friends in. Okay. Yeah. Are they good sorts?
Well, three of them are mates, and then one of them is bringing two others, so they might be wrong'uns.
Did any of them win money on Max getting the...
No.
Anyway,
just trying to narrow it down.
Still TBC. Perhaps people bought tickets because they're really excited about the TBC and what will be... not the biggest anticlimax of all time, but anyway, I don't know who it is either. Right, England and the Rooney Palooza, the number 10 shirt, a guard of honour. He'll be the skipper when he comes on. I know we've talked about it a bit before. Is this a lovely thing, Faye, or are you absolutely furious about it, like Peter Shilton is, or are you just slightly indifferent?
I'm slightly indifferent. I think it's a nice thing for him. To be recognised. He seems slightly embarrassed by it, to be honest. The thing I don't like is the Guard of Honour. The Guard of Honour is just smacks of John Terry coming off in the 26th minute at Chelsea-Sunderland. And it was just cringe. Mm. And it feels a little bit like that. How are they going to do it? Are they just going to stop playing and walk over? And like, how's it? Or is it before the game? I don't understand.
Do you think, I was thinking about this on the way in, to celebrate someone's career before it's over, it just seems Wayne Rooney has achieved a lot for England, right? And he's the record goal scorer and he's got a whole bunch of caps and that is great. And what he's achieved for England is great in relative, and it is relative because England haven't really achieved anything, right? Apart from winning the World Cup a long time ago. In England terms, what he's done is great. But we just need to wait 30 years and then you sort of forget about the games that weren't great and you forget about the tournaments that weren't that great because you just go, oh, wasn't that nice? And I just think it's too soon. And I think it'd be too soon for anyone, you know, to celebrate their career until years later.
Personally, I'd be embarrassed, but I don't see the harm in it. I don't see the point of it either, but it is not going to affect my life in any way whatsoever.
Producer Johnson says, bring Rooney on as a 60-year-old in 2048. Yes, I agree. I mean, look, we did it on the radio the other day and people were saying, well, if he was paraded like the Hereford Bull, then I'd be in, or like be on a plinth and he could be carried out by the two captains like the ball normally is. So look, that's the Rooney sideshow. Jadon Sancho should start, Lars, and that is more interesting.
Yeah, much more so. And
let's build him up.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. You hear actually people say from Germany that it's been suggested that the club at Dortmund, they're kind of a bit iffy about how quickly this has gone. Because he has been very good. And on merit, I think there's logic to having him in there. But I suspect they would have perhaps wanted him to fly under the radar for a little bit longer before the pressure of being England's next saviour gets plonked down right on top of his head. But he has looked excellent. And no, it's exciting to have him in there. And in some ways, from a sporting sense, more exciting than the Rooney Palooza as it is. But I think it's a slow news week when people get that excited about the Rooney thing. I think it's a nice little gesture. We did a similar thing in Norway with Henning Berg because he was set to retire on 99 caps, which everyone thought was a bit unfortunate. And he was obviously a big figure in our sporting history. So he got to play the first 17 minutes of a friendly to get him to an even 100. Except I think what they're doing with Rooney is that he'll be brought on. With Henning Berg, we started him and then just sort of took him off. So he had a big rousing applause, which I thought was a nice way of doing it.
Not he'll be brought on with Henning Berg, which would be great if Rooney came
on. That would be very confusing, yeah.
Faye, Callum Wilson as well in the squad should get some game time tonight. And it's a great story, you know, especially considering the knee injuries that he's had.
Mm, yeah, he's great. And he's a great player. And I'm so pleased for him this season that he's been able to go and prove it. He's been fantastic for Bournemouth. He's a proper professional as well. Head screwed on. And great. And great for him to get experience because we do need a backup for Harry Kane. And Callum Wilson is that type of player. And you watch him playing for Bournemouth, and he's full of confidence again. And of course, you know, awful, awful injuries that had been taken away from him, but he seems to have come back, you know, completely rejuvenated.
Justin says, will you be bringing back AC Jimbo for a Rooney-style farewell podcast? We need to wait 2 years, don't we? And then we can do it. So probably the start of next season. Okay. In an international break.
Okay. Yeah. Callum Wilson.
Well, what, would Jimbo just come in and present the first 10 minutes?
No, he'd come on for the last 10, of honour.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Just very quickly on Callum Wilson. He's interesting because his stats are weird. He's obviously scored a lot of goals, but he's also missed a very large number of big chances, which suggests that he can actually get even better and score even more goals. So exciting times for the Wilson.
Tonight also the England under-21s play Italy under-21s in a friendly. Also tonight in England's group, Croatia-Spain in the Nations League. If Spain win, Sunday's game with Croatia is a relegation playoff. If Croatia win, then the Nations League is up for grabs for England because it's a head-to-head thing. So if they've got a better head-to-head ratio on goal difference against Spain, are you still with me, Barry?
Yeah.
Okay. And let's hope Croatia win that one. Tonight, the Republic of Ireland play Northern Ireland in a friendly, Barry. Are you excited?
No, not at all. I'm not really sure what the point of this is because I wouldn't imagine it'll be a big crowd puller. The Republic of Ireland struggled to fill the Aviva for friendly matches. I'm guessing that's where it is. I've paid so little attention to it that I'm not even certain. But yeah, it just seems weird. And I'm kind of glad it's happening just after poppy season's ended because that could have been a bit... bit of a thorny one.
Northern Ireland play Austria on Sunday. They need a win to stay up. B4 tomorrow. It does sound like battleships. Wales v Denmark. A win wins the group promotion. This would be, I mean, I think the Nations League, we agree, has been a good thing. And this would be great for Ryan Giggs if he achieved this, Faye.
Yeah, it would. I'm struggling to remember. What did you say, B?
B4.
This is the bit that...
yes, you've hit my frigate.
And this actually blows my mind as well. This is what I can't quite get my brain into. So they would be promoted.
Mm.
And then for the next... I mean, what's the finals in June? Finals are in June?
Yes.
You're looking at me so blankly.
I'm like, why are you looking at me? God damn it, yes.
I'm looking for reassurance because I still find it quite complicated. Mm-hmm. But yes, it would be good for Ryan Giggs to go back to your actual question. You know, what he's done with Wales has been great. And yeah, good luck.
I was listening to Ellis James's Feast of Football podcast in which our friend, the actor and comedian, and his fellow Wales fans, Danny Gabaldon and Ian Roberts, discuss all things footballing in Welsh. And I'm getting the vibe that I think Wales is sort of their first competitive game under Giggs was against the Republic of Ireland, and they absolutely battered us. But Ireland was so bad that I think we made them look a lot better than they are. And the boys freely admit now, I had a feeling at the time, but they admit now, you know, oh, we got a bit carried away by that performance. But they seem a bit baffled by some of Giggsy's decisions and the way he's going about his business. Like, apparently he hasn't been to see Gareth Bale play once this season, which, you know, Gareth Bale's going to be in the Wales team. He doesn't need to see him. Apparently he hasn't been to see Swansea City play at all this season, which is just remarkable considering...
What does he watch?
There's quite a few Swansea City players in the squad. Chris Meppham is injured. Centre half. He's brought in a right back from Sheffield United in his stead, which the lads all sort of were baffled by. You know, they think Swansea centre half Joe Roden should be brought in. He was apparently brought in from Meppham before. So, yeah, I think they're kind of uncertain about Giggs, having been really pleased with his appointment before up to now.
Do you know so much more about Welsh football now because you just consume anything that Ellis does?
Yeah.
Okay. Denmark will be out without captain Simon Kjær.
Simon Kjær.
Simon Kjær. Let me defer to Lars for Scandinavian pronunciations.
But Norwegians and Danish people would pronounce that very differently. Danish is a strange language.
Is that right? Norwegian is what?
But they sound like
normal
one. Danish people, with all due respect to our dear Danish listeners, and I know there are a few of them, you do sound like you're eating a very warm potato when you're talking.
I'm a big fan of Scandinavian rivalry that I have absolutely no knowledge of. Gareth Bale are going to be assessed at the head of the game. Autumn 2020 phase, the next round of the Nations League gubbins. Producer Jonathan says, last year as hell won't be our TBC in Copenhagen next time. on Saturday, Albania play Scotland. Scotland second in the group, sandwiched between Israel at the top and Albania at the bottom, Baz.
If Scotland win both those matches, they are promoted, they're guaranteed a playoff place, but they have a quite remarkable injury list. I think they've had 10 people pull out, 10 different players, many of whom would be automatic starters, but they should have enough about them to beat Israel and Albania, but Scotland being Scotland, they will almost certainly make life difficult for themselves. But yeah, they have a lot of injuries.
Other interesting games, Netherlands play France on Friday, Gibraltar-Armenia on Friday as well. Gibraltar going for their third straight win. Adam says, how does the panel assess Gibraltar's chances of completing their fairy tale to get to the Euro 2020 playoffs? Lars.
I mean, it's great for them that they're winning games. I mean, I think that's one of the successes of the Nations League, is that you've sort of secluded the teams that would otherwise just get smashed, and they can play against each other, and I think at the end of the day, that's probably better development-wise, that they get these positive experiences and they feel they're competitive in these games. And yeah, well done, Gibraltar.
Lord Keir says, when teams get relegated in the Nations League this weekend, should we have "We'll Be Back" banners?
But Germany are on the brink of relegation from League A. Did we ever think we'd see a German side get relegated?
Well, I didn't.
It's fantastic.
I mean... there's still a chance. I mean, Scotland could get relegated, I believe, whereas Gibraltar still could theoretically go up. So there is a chance that Scotland and Gibraltar could kind of pass each other.
Oh, God, that'd be devastating.
In the elevators of life.
To be a Scotland fan, that would be worse than Gibraltar.
I should stress this probably won't happen, but it could happen. Fact that it could happen is funny.
And that's why we love football, isn't it? That'll do for part
two. One of
the
many reasons.
In part three, manager sackings, manager appointments, and referees being suspended for using lateral thinking. Back in a second. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. David Squires could not be here to join us live for the judging of the Football Weekly mascot competition to win a copy of his book, Goalless Draws. But he did send us this voice memo.
Thanks, Max. And listener, if you sent in a mascot design, then thank you. There were loads of excellent entries and some that were genuinely terrifying. Some of them couldn't have been weirder if you'd drawn them in your own waist. So well done. You know that bit in Seven where Detective Brad Pitt and Detective Morgan Freeman kick in the door of a serial killer's house and find it littered with notebooks full of disturbing images? Well, imagine that, but instead of illustrations of the devil, there are just loads of satanic drawings of respected journalist Barry Glendenning. Barry, if you need to lie low for a while, then, mate, please don't come here, because I do not want these people following you. Anyway, all of the drawings made me laugh, and I appreciate the amount of time and number of printer scanners you must have ruined in submitting the designs. In a way, you're all winners, but in a more specific and accurate way, the winners are Alex Mosey for his excellent Carabao Cup box design, and Tom Wilson for his Phantom Breather design. But if you didn't win, don't despair. There are still loads of copies of my book, Goalless Draws, Illuminating the Genius of Modern Football, available in shops and on the internet. Thank you.
Thank you, David Squires. They were quite extraordinary, the efforts that people went to for this competition.
Yes, some of them were genuinely disturbing, and a lot of them were of me, and quite frightening, I have to say. But thank you, everyone, for taking an interest.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll put up a gallery or something, or we'll put them online on the Twitter producer Jonathan just shaking his head. This competition's done. I'm not interested. Anyway, football. Hey, Lars, Santiago Solari's been made the permanent Real Madrid boss. Yes. Johnny says, is Solari just a bargain bin Big Phil Scolari?
I don't think he is. Well, I mean, he's been described by such people as our own Sid Lowe as a very sort of thoughtful and pleasant and erudite man. So he clearly has no chance at all at Real Madrid. He'll be hounded out of the job at some point.
I was Sid saying that they sort of had to make him permanent. They couldn't have an interim.
He has started very well. He's had some very, very soft games to begin with, but it has started very well. And given how bad the feeling was at the club before, I mean, if he's given the place a lift, they don't have any obvious full-time replacements lined up. Why not? Give it Solari till end of the season.
They had no choice because in Spain, once a manager is sacked, you have 2 weeks to replace him. And if you don't, the interim manager, you basically have to give him the job. So you have to have a full-time manager.
It's the same on this pod, by the way. this is a tweet we got from Sam on the 26th of August. Is sacking Kev Nolan from Notts County the worst managerial decision of this season? Admittedly, we're bottom of the league, but he got us to the playoffs with the worst team last season. Sam yesterday tweeted, Harry Kewell sacking after just 10 weeks. Which was worse, this or the decision to sack Nolan? Fabe, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I was surprised when they sacked Kevin Nolan, to be honest. They gave Luton a big run for their money in League Two last season. I thought he was doing really well. I thought he should have been given more time as well. Harry Kewell was a strange one. 74 days, 2 months in charge. Is that enough for someone to turn things around? I don't think so.
He won 3 out of 14, Harry Kewell. The thing about Kevin Nolan is and he'd done some stuff at Orient as well, hadn't he? It's interesting when players who've played at a high level go in at a lower level, you know, Sheringham going to Stevenage, for example. What's their knowledge of the league? Do they understand it? And Kevin Nolan seemed that he did.
But he also had the players on side as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a good team ethic. And also, I do think that players are more receptive to listening to people who are only just out of the game.
The same should be said for Kewell then, I guess. And he did okay at Crawley, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
ATC says, could you mention that even with his remarkably short tenure, Kewell didn't ingratiate himself with the Notts County fans and deserved to go with his arrogance and egotistical pre-post-match talk? The former Nottingham Forest defender Steve Chettle is set to take charge on an interim basis. On Monday...
To be honest, Harry Kewell being manager in Notts County was barely on my radar until I heard he'd been sacked, but... Was he arrogant or...
I have no idea.
I saw him being interviewed a couple of weeks ago. He seemed very, very enthusiastic and determined to give the job his best shot. But obviously that's not going to happen now.
No. And this is just ATC, one person tweeting us. So he knows more about Notts County than we do. But I can't confirm or deny as to the... niceness or not of Harry Kewell over this situation. On Monday, League One side AFC Wimbledon sacked Neil Ardley. John Askey as well was sacked by Shrewsbury. Neil Ardley had been at Wimbledon for six years.
Yeah.
And they're just moving. They're almost back in Plough Lane. And that would have been a lovely story if he'd managed to stay there.
Absolutely. I mean, they're my local side. They're just down the road from me. They advertised the job on Twitter, which is interesting.
Have they?
Apparently.
This could be our chance. I sort of think as podders, we'd be better taking over a sort of Bayern Munich side.
I must be the only football fan alive who doesn't think I'd make a good manager. I would be absolutely useless.
Oh, I wouldn't be good either. I'd be okay in the press conferences, I think.
But like, you kind of manage your team already, don't you? You're in charge of the admin, rounding up players, all that sort of stuff.
Can I just tell you what they said?
Yeah.
4 bullet points for this job. The successful candidate will ideally have.
Yes.
You can decide between the two of you whether or not you have this. A track record of success in the game.
Okay.
Excellent motivational and people management skills. Max, you had us all in at 8 a.m. this morning.
True, that is true.
That rules you out. A clear vision of how they can deliver success on and off the pitch for the club.
I couldn't.
And a track record of developing young players.
No.
I don't want to go to away games either. I really, you know, that is the big problem.
Who would you send in your place?
Barry. I do, like, if you could job share.
Didn't Steve Parrish give us the Crystal Palace job?
For one game, yeah.
And we beat Hull.
We did, yeah.
Without even having to go.
We didn't go.
We beat Hull away.
Yeah.
So we have a proven track record.
Did he pay you for that one game?
No, it was pro bono. We felt for them at the time. And now you're angry.
We interviewed him on the radio and asked, oh, can we have a go? And he went, yes. So technically he appointed us. We beat Hull away and then we quit. Or then he appointed someone else.
No,
we were kind
bonus.
Of interim managers.
No win bonus either.
No, we didn't. I'm not in this for the money. No.
But your win ratio is second to none.
It's as good as Big Sam's for England. It's exactly the same, actually. Phil Brown as well left Swindon on Sunday. Here's a great story. Referee David McNamara has been suspended for 3 weeks by the FA for deciding a Women's Super League kickoff with a game of rock, paper, scissors, or as I call it, paper, scissors, stone. It's a similar game. Instead of a coin toss, Man City Reading on the 26th of October. He has accepted an FA charge of not acting in the best interests of the game. Here's a quote from the FA Women's Refereeing Manager, Joanna Stimpson, who clearly doesn't find the thing funny at all. The referee forgot his coin, and in that moment in a TV game he was really pushed for time. He really should have been more prepared. He should have had a coin. It was disappointing. It's not appropriate. It's very unprofessional.
I feel like this decision has brought the game into disrepute.
If you think about all the things that are wrong with football, right? A ban of almost a month for someone who just uses some lateral thinking. It's just my mind.
I can see her point though, because it was a TV game. Yeah. You know, we're pushing the women's game at the moment, and it does ridicule it somewhat.
Does it?
If you take it,
this ridicules it more though.
I thought it was hilarious. Yeah. And very ingenious. I'm just playing devil's advocate with the reason why she would see it like that, and I do understand, you know, who would be and why they would be upset by it, because it does just make it a little bit of a joke.
Well, Chelsea women's manager Emma Hayes, who is a woman I have a lot of time for, she's very, you know, talks a lot of sense. I saw her being interviewed on, I think, Sky Sports News about this yesterday, and she was furious, you know, stating that the referee had basically made a mockery of the women's game. And I just think it's a really over the top reaction.
I don't think
the guy forgot a coin and was under time pressure, so he improvised.
But if
made
that
two.
Happened in the Premier League,
we would have thought it would be really funny and moved on.
Do you think so?
Yes.
I don't think so. I think if that had happened in the Premier League, people would have reacted very, very differently.
Well, there would be a lot of
hilarious
pompous outrage from the usual quarters, but it would be quite funny. Worse things happen in the Premier League every week.
I'm a fan. I find it funny. I think good on you, you know, for coming up with something on the spot like that. Fine. I can understand why people who have fought to promote the women's game and get it taken seriously would be disappointed by that and enraged by it.
But it's misguided, surely. That's it. Yes, I totally agree with all of that, and promoting the women's game is really, really important. But it's someone else who watches the women's game a lot said, you know, there are refereeing decisions there that aren't great because the standard refereeing isn't great, and you know, there are other referees that make mistakes for whatever reason that should be much more liable to be sanctioned for 3 weeks.
But what makes more news? You know, this is something so random and so different.
But the funny thing is, it's made so much more news because he's been suspended for 3 weeks.
I didn't know it had happened until
Me
he
neither.
Was suspended, and now everyone's talking about it. Everyone's laughing at it, and
I think it's disappointing he was suspended because I don't think he wasn't making a mockery of the game. I don't know. I don't know the guy. Maybe he was. The way I read it was that he wasn't making a book. He just was using his initiative, and that was what he came up with. You know, why he didn't use water and dynamite, I don't know, because there are two other, you know, elements in rock, scissors, paper if you play different rules. But
Or he could have just put two hands out and said, where's the coin?
Yeah.
Or is that lying and bringing it more into disrepute?
That's lying.
I mean, we went for alternatives on the radio yesterday, of which my favourite was a quick game of Jumanji.
How is there a quick game of Jumanji?
Someone said Risk, Monopoly, Spot the Ball, Hide and Seek would have been good, or British Bulldog.
Max, if this referee, rather than in terms of bringing the game into disrepute, if the referee instead had insisted that the game kick off at an ungodly hour because he had to ref a different game at the time the original game was meant to. What would be the appropriate punishment?
Just thanks and love that you've got more time to spend your afternoon with your loved ones.
Yep.
Have you seen this? N'Golo Kante, the nicest man in the world, isn't he? The nicest footballer on earth. He created an offshore company, according to Football Leaks, but refused to be paid through it, despite Chelsea's insistence, with a source saying N'Golo is unflinching. He just wants a normal salary.
He still drives his Mini, apparently, and shops at his local supermarket.
Well, his Mini is probably quite big for him. It's the equivalent of, you know, me driving a large Bentley. And why wouldn't you shop at your local supermarket? I mean, I have loads of money. I'm going to shop at a supermarket that's really far away.
I didn't want to name what the... I thought it was a Morrison's, so I was thinking it's not your local Waitrose is what I was trying to think.
I mean, I suppose... I wonder how many Premier League footballers push the trolley around the aisles themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Not that many.
And there was that lovely story about him stopping around someone's house for dinner. You know, someone bumped into him.
Met people at a mosque.
Yeah, and just went over for dinner.
Watch match of the day with him.
Producer says, allegedly, this Football Leaks story, we don't... It's not totally confirmed, but, you know, disappointing if N'Golo sued us for being nice about him. Chris Godfrey says, N'Golo Kante acts how everyone on Twitter thinks they would act if they were a multimillionaire footballer. Oh, that's entirely accurate. Pedestrian says, given that the Checkatrade trophy is tin pot, what kitchen item materials are the other cups and leagues? It's a very good question. I suppose the Premier League is the Le Creuset dish, is it? Or was that the Champions League?
I've not used my Le Creuset dish. I bought one just because it was a Le Creuset dish and I've not used it.
God, what a way. I mean, that's a very expensive signing to leave on the bench.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Very silly.
They crack it out later. In Checkatrade news, Cambridge topped their group after a 3-1 win over Colchester. Important, we rested our players for the FA Cup so we could win in the Checkatrade. 37-year-old Gareth Barry played for West Brom under-21s in a defeat at Macclesfield. And 1,500 Sunderland fans went to Morecambe to watch a 1-0 win, only a 2.5-hour drive, though, so it's not that bad. But still, 1,500 to go to a game that I think you were through already. Producer Jonathan says, Max, you don't know how to pronounce Simon Kjaer, but you do know how to pronounce Le Creuset, the people's game. Peterson says, Usain Bolt was in the stands for the victory versus the Mariners game in Melbourne recently. Do you think he would tell anyone within earshot, you know, I had a trial with them once? Like that annoying guy you come across at any top flight football ground. Actually, David,
every single man, isn't it? I could have played for ..
No, it's always trials with Palace. That's the one. David
did
Squires,
you have trials with anyone, Max?
No, I was nowhere near good enough. David Squires did, on the subject of the coin toss, he sent me a photo that an A-League game was started with a Christmas cracker once instead of a coin toss.
Love that.
That's really good.
What about a wishbone?
Wishbone would be good. Wishbone. We wondered about arm wrestle.
Yeah.
Because if you've got your strongest members of your side...
Tug of war, in that case.
A tug of war. That's a good warm-up for the...
Yeah.
Exactly.
But they could play a football match to decide who kicks off. I think if you haven't got it in you to remember a coin, you're unlikely to bring a chicken wishbone or a Christmas cracker.
Game of kaplunk. Tom Hart says, so Harry Redknapp's on I'm a Celebrity. Which other football players and managers would we like to see being buried in bugs and eating weird shit? I'm thinking Mark Hughes, Jose Mourinho and Neil Warnock. I mean, Jose on I'm a Celebrity would be...
I'm really looking forward to watching Harry on it.
Are you?
Yeah.
I think Nigel Pearson would thrive in this environment.
Would he eat the other... some wispy made in Chelsea style be eaten by Nigel Pearson? Tallulah's gone missing. Where is she? Nigel Pearson there goes, I'm not hungry.
You turn into Lord of the Flies with Nigel Pearson. I got the conch.
And Blakey, to finish the pod, says, my missus was curious as to what Barry looks like. Her response, not as old as I thought, and looks a bit like Marty Pellow. My reply, yes, Marty Pellow in his darker days. Marty Pellow?
I'd take that, Barry.
And then those angel eyes set me on fire.
You forgot the whoa-whoa in the middle.
Yeah.
Hey, Faye, happy birthday. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks.
Cheers, Lars.
Thanks, Max.
Go back to walking the streets. Barry.
Cheers.
I can't probably see you tomorrow. We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.